Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today, no Royce Young, but I've got Ethan Sherwood-Strauss recording a Friday episode on a Thursday, so it's very possible we will miss a big injury news item or some kind of trade, or this entire podcast could be even more irrelevant than it is as of the time of its posting.
We also might scrap it because I've misplaced my microphone, so we don't know what the sound quality will be. I can tell you right now that I am hunched over like Igor, or maybe Igor if he was caught in the gears of some sort of British industrial machinery. This is a very MacGyvered, sloppily MacGyvered podcast.
Luckily for you, the audio quality on this podcast, because it is just a me sitting on the floor in my living room, it's not really ever that good. So I don't know if people will notice the difference.
Well, I will try to make my monotone even more so to cover up any defects.
Yeah, you maybe if we both go very monotone, we can put people to sleep like when you attempted to watch a baseball game last night.
I really wanted to come prepared to have something to discuss with my friend Zach Harper.
To discuss baseball, a baseball game I don't care about on a basketball podcast.
It was very misguided, but that's what I was going for. And in the Tampa Cleveland game, I fell asleep around the fourth inning. Just conked out. Couldn't do it.
I didn't start watching until the eighth inning, because I had some TiVo to catch up on, and it wasn't really that. I saw some outs, saw a couple of hits.
I rationalized it as it might be relevant to our profession, because it might make the Cleveland fans less angry about the various things they're angry about and more happy and positive if they had some baseball success.
Well, Thursday's podcast, which just went up, but if you're listening to this podcast, it went up yesterday. There was some praising of Kyrie Irving, so they should be quite happy.
Oh, I'm sure they will suddenly be very happy. I might make them, unless we scrap this whole podcast, I might make them sad if we discuss my thoughts on the decision 2.0, I know you're the host, Zach. I don't want to take gears. I don't want to drive it in a direction that you don't want.
As far as I'm concerned, this is one of those student driver cars where we've got wheels and brakes on both sides.
Everybody around us is terrified right now. They're completely horrified over where this could go.
Yeah.
I believe that the next decision is much ado about nothing, and that he will just re-sign with Miami or roll over his contract for another season. What say you, Zach?
I think he's going to the Timberwolves.
You heard it here first.
That's what I think. I think you're going to have a Ricky Rubio, Derek Williams package plus a draft pick that sends my favorite flashy point guard away and brings in, I don't know, a pretty good player. That's my prediction.
I could see that happening, but
yeah,
but
why wouldn't it?
Back to reality, to the real world. It's so interesting to me that no one's really in position to sign LeBron James. They could perhaps get him. Wade is about to turn 32 in January, but no one's properly prepared to do it. You know, the Lakers. We all know that they're a mess, and they don't have really anybody in-house, a current superstar. Bryant's probably too old. His superstar days are likely behind him to bring him on board in the way Wade did. So right there, that's a tough sell. And if you're telling me that Cleveland, that's the main team, that's the front runner in all this, then I'm saying he's signing with Miami. That's crazy. He's not going back to Cleveland. Are we all just ignoring the crazy rant Gilbert had at the end there and how they haven't had a winning season in a very long time, and how, well, he left them?
I think the thing with the whole decision 2.0 whatever is, I don't know if it's likely he would consider signing in Cleveland or not, but we seem to have this thing of, all right, there are a lot of people that think he screwed up in the way he did it and that he did Cleveland wrong. And so we're hoping that he would want to go back to Cleveland as a redemption, as an I'm sorry, look how humble I've become since leaving you guys, I want to make this right. Whereas I don't know that there is making this right. Like they were very successful outside of winning championships when he was there, and he made Dan Gilbert a boatload of money. Like, I don't know what like making this right actually would be. And I'm not trying to troll Cleveland fans right now. It's just like, I think it's more of a us projecting how we would want yes. him to feel in this situation. Maybe he will something. Maybe Kyrie Irving will be an enticing thing. Maybe Andrew Bynum is healthy and is a big man for LeBron to lean on. And, you know, they've got a bunch of young assets that they can move if the sign and trade was needed. And maybe that is an attractive option to him. I don't know. I just know that it feels more like we are projecting that scenario on him, maybe more than reality states. I think the Lakers is actually a scenario that would be more likely than Cleveland, just because yeah. it's you know, the warm weather city. It's one of the biggest franchises in sports, and if he was able to go there, even with an older, re-signed, lesser-paid core of Powell, Kobe, and Nash, that's a good enough team to win a title. Like, it really is, even, like, just in that first year, and then you have the flexibility early on in his contract to bring in, I don't know, Kevin Love, or bring in, you know, some pieces to make it work. Like, I know it's not an attractive spot as of right now, just on its own, but I mean, you add LeBron to that team, and they're a title contender. They just are. Like, if everyone's willing to take a pay cut.
LA is probably more likely than the team run by the guy who tried to incite a public rage against LeBron.
Right. I don't recall Jim Buss taking over and going on a rant about LeBron, but I don't pay that close attention in the offseason.
I think you cut to the heart of the matter. Well, first of all, you said young assets, which always sounds dirty, and I just wanted to note that. It's hard to say young assets without making it sound unseemly. Yeah. Second of all, you're exactly right. This is about projection. The people who believe, for the most part, that LeBron should come back to Cleveland or is going to are the people who are angry at him. And I don't believe LeBron is angry at himself. So there is an element of projection here. LeBron probably looks at what happened and goes, hey, I was proven right.
Yeah,
I don't have any redemption to seek.
He's played in every NBA Finals since making that decision.
This is a good point. Might makes right. So, yes, I could see it happening, but it seems pretty unlikely. And it's just so odd that we all knew this was coming. We all knew LeBron would be a free agent. And a variety of scenarios cascaded to create this one where there isn't a team to prepare to take advantage.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Because you have to wonder, if he is going to leave, is Miami even going to want to consider a sign and trade?
They might, but
I kind of wouldn't. I would just start over.
Yeah, where would he leave where you could even do that? Where there are the assets that would even help them? I'm not even sure. That's too far down the line. I just find it so interesting that the last time he was a free agent, and a few other guys were, there were all these teams who were in these enticing destinations, with Chicago, the two New York teams, Miami, and right now doesn't really exist. And I wonder if in 2016, this is getting way far out ahead of it, with Durant, if teams will be prepared, or with the CBA as it is, the structure of it has just changed in a way where teams can't wait and can't buy their time like that.
Well, funny enough, I am watching NBA TV right now, and as the Nets go through a stretching exercise, it reminds me of a conversation I had with Tim Bontemps on a podcast not too long ago.
Name drop.
It's a great name drop. And he talked about, you know, he wasn't speculating that this is going to happen, but the Brooklyn Nets are in a position to have room to go get Kevin Durant in 2016 when he's a free agent. And, you know, there are tie-ins with one, that team being very good, and they can, you know, keep whatever components they really want to put around him off the current roster. And there's the Jay-Z tie-in, and, you know, it's not a crazy thought. Maybe they will be the ones prepared. And really, yeah, what if LeBron sticks around another year or signs a 1-year extension? And what if Kevin Love doesn't opt out? I mean, if we're going to talk about superstars teaming up again, there's a real possibility of teams waiting around, or players waiting around, for the Brooklyn Nets to clear the books in 2016.
Yes, this is why I believe LeBron will roll over this year to the next year, just so he can wait until there are more options. And Yeah, we can talk about this. I'm sure people listen and go, how are you even talking about this? It's so long from now. There is this internet rage against considering options that are too far in the future. I know nobody wants to talk about the next presidential election, but it is in the back of your mind if you're a Thunder fan. Are they doing enough for Durant? Is this the right scenario? At the present moment, it's assumed that he's such a good guy, such a loyal guy. The opposite of LeBron, he tweeted out his contract when LeBron left and all of that, but he might get tired of it. He might not want to spend all of his 20s and all of his prime in Oklahoma City. That's quite conceivable, especially if the situation there isn't as good as it was. So we already know that they traded away his best friend on the team. So it is something that you have to consider.
Well, I think that I think you are chomping at the bit to bury Sam Presti. You are anti-Sam Presti after this James Harden trade, and now that Russell Westbrook is injured, you are leaping on the wounded Thunder like a lion in a jungle.
Wounded Thunder is my Native American name.
You know. I can laugh at that because I'm dating a Native American. You know what I find weird about lions is that they're the king of the jungle, but I only see them in kind of safari type open fields attacking gazelles. I think of the jungle and I think of tall trees. I think of almost a drier rainforest type of setting, and I never see a lion in the jungle.
Tigers are in the jungle, but that. In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. No, he doesn't. That's just not where
he's out in the plains.
Yeah, he's out in the plain. He'd be very uncomfortable. He'd be all sweaty. I don't think the lion deals well with humidity.
The jaguar is the king of the jungle.
Oh, yeah. But you can't have the lion in the jungle because just think of that mane. The lion wants that mane to be out there. The mane is soaked with tropical rainwater.
Well,
that's just gonna look silly.
If we're going to get into some late 80s, early 90s stand-up comedy routines here, the female lion does not have the mane. And maybe that is the proverbial nagging wife keeping the lion, the male lion with that mane in the jungle uncomfortable, as he's willing to kind of go through it as long as he can have his lion cave to watch sports.
The Breaking Bad parallels are leaping up at me and slapping me in the face. I see Skyler, I see Walt. But getting back to that Sam Presti and this idea, this notion that you're perpetuating.
Come on.
I want to bury him. I just want some nuance. I want it to be balanced. I'm not saying that Sam Presti is a bad GM. I believe he's done a lot of very good things. But we can look at his body of work and not have this false binary of every decision is indicative of genius or every decision means that he's a fraud and it's the emperor's new clothes. I believe there's some good and some bad, and recently Presti's decisions have been bad, and how can you disagree with that?
What about this? What if James Harden didn't actually want to stay in Oklahoma City?
Well, they still traded him for not a lot of value.
They traded him for one of the better scoring shooting guards in the league.
A year of him,
but still, that was the. I mean, we don't know. I can tell you this: it sounds like there's some tampering going on. At least there has been with the Wolves, with Rick Adelman and Kevin Martin. I heard 2 years ago from a couple of valuable sources around the league that Kevin Martin was interested in playing with Ricky Rubio, and then they have talked about over the last 2 days how Kevin Martin would occasionally. Say things to Rick Adelman about like, when are we going to get back together? When are we going to be together on a basketball team again? Before free agency. So I don't know. Maybe Kevin Martin. Maybe they thought they could re-sign Kevin Martin. That was never actually an option.
Kevin Martin just loved elbow sets way too much.
He does. He's the king of them in terms of wing players.
Oh man. See, I did not know this,
but all right. So that coupled with. Maybe they thought the draft pick was going to be better than it was, although it was going to be in a weak draft, so maybe they should have prepared better for that.
Toronto, I mean, I would even say that Toronto might have underperformed last year. We didn't expect them to be awful.
No, I actually expected them to contend for a playoff team, but, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people expected that. So it's not altogether surprising that draft pick was fairly high up there. So it just wasn't a whole lot of value. Now, you can say that perhaps they expected Kevin Martin to stay on for more than a year, and that just didn't break their way. But look,
well, wait, but let me cut you off real quick, because I'm going to do it anyway. I guess it depends on what you view Jeremy Lamb as, because I'm not a Jeremy Lamb guy. I don't think he's very good, and I don't think he's going to be good. But there are some people that are very high on his scoring ability. So if he's not going to be James Harden, but if he's able to come in and be that James Harden role in terms of at least the scoring, and Steven Adams ends up being their starting center in four or five years, then maybe we have to look at the trade differently. Maybe it wasn't so bad.
I agree. That incredibly unlikely scenario transpires. We'll have to look.
Well, look, they've got Hasheem Thabeet, and they've got Kendrick Perkins as the starter. It's not inconceivable that Steven Adams becomes the starting center on that team in a couple of years.
Look, it's not inconceivable that something will change and this will all be salvaged. Maybe James Harden will have an awful year. But as it stands right now, they traded a whole lot of value for a whole little value. And it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good now. I don't know that it won't look good enough.
It didn't look good when they made the deal. It didn't look good when they made the deal. There are these other issues with Presti, and perhaps it's not Presti, perhaps it's ownership. So I just want to say the decisions emanating from the Thunder that might be his fault, might not be his fault, have been questionable of late.
Let me say this. I think once again you are upset with this Thunder organization because this trade came out of the blue. You like to speculate. You like to think, what if this happens? What if that happens? And even though we knew the contract extension talks were not going all that well, this trade came out of the blue and it caught you off guard. You don't like having the rug pulled from under your nice basketball feet.
First of all, I like surprises quite a bit. That's not what this is at all. It's more that I was a big Harden fan. Actually, I was a bigger fan of Harden's game. This is going to sound quite hipster. Oh, but I was a bigger fan of Harden's game before he was traded to the Rockets. There are more issues and things I have a problem with that Harden does on the Rockets than when he was at the Thunder. His defense is a lot worse.
Yeah.
He jacks up a lot of bad shots on the Rockets.
I don't know if his defense is worse. I think it's maybe exposed. More exposed.
Well, be that as it may, if the choice went between Harden and Westbrook at the time, I would have gone with Harden, while acknowledging that's an incredibly hard decision. I don't believe that's an obvious one or something that only I can see that others can't see. So because of that, I was already against the trade because I would have angled towards keeping Harden. Then for what they got for Harden, who was on Team USA at the time, I'm making gesticulations right now, Zach. You can't see me.
And you're hunched over.
Position. My hands are gesticulating wildly because I'm so passionate on this topic. But that to me was why I was against it. It wasn't the surprise. It was the dealing Harden instead of Westbrook and then not getting a lot for Harden. And we're all talking about, we should say that this has become an issue now because, fairly or unfairly, this Westbrook injury is cast. Can a damper be cast?
I think a damper can be cast. I don't see why not.
Cast a damper over the Thunder.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would say, I don't know. I think that the Westbrook injury just colors everything. Now, maybe they would be able to make up for it if they still had James Harden. That's fair. I mean, they did trade away a guy that's arguably a top 10 player.
Yeah, that's an issue. It connects to another issue when we're talking about these rankings, where is Harden really a top 10 player? It seems as though when we make these rankings, there's this tacit agreement that we're not going to count defense against you.
I think that impact is maybe, I feel in a lot of cases impact is more important than all-around player. And yeah. It's the reason I back up Steve Nash on the MVP awards he had. It's like, yes, he's a terrible defender. Yes, he wasn't a great scorer at the time, but his impact on the Suns that is good enough for at least a share of the MVP award. Wait, if you want to call it co-MVPs for those times, like, that's fine with me. But he deserved that consideration and that honor. And with Harden, I mean, what did we think of this Rockets team before he was traded there? They're 25 wins last year, maybe? I mean, they looked like a really bad team, and then they made the playoffs. They were the 8th seed. They were, you know, in the running for 6th seed for quite a bit of the second half of the season, and they settled into the 8th seed. And, you know, that's roughly a 20-win swing. I think that kind of impact is – I mean, maybe we misjudged how talented this Rockets team was going to be anyway, and with their hectic style of play, but – I think
the rating of Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, well, sure. I think the internet loves Chandler Parsons. I think though that the impact of James Harden, we saw just what it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. With the Rockets, I don't believe Harden's plus minus is all that impressive. So that's why I bring that up. I would probably put him top 10. I was just raising the question. Begging the question and talking about these rankings in general, how it's funny how certain guys, if you're good at defense, that will be mentioned and you'll get credit for it. But when guys aren't good at defense, it doesn't seem to count against them.
It's all case by case, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, which maybe it's harder to pick out criteria and rules for how we judge these things when everything is so case
by case.
We're
offense biased. We're offense biased.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hell. Jean-Claude Van Damme said it in the movie Double Team. Offense gets the glory.
Oh, there you go. And his co-star, Dennis Rodman, must have really felt that on a deep level. That must have resonated with him, considering all he had to do to seek attention because he couldn't get it as a defensive player.
Yeah. I will say this in terms of on-off numbers. The Rockets were 1.5 points better on offense with him on the court. And 3.7 points worse defensively with him on the court.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There is a certain way that you have to take those numbers, and I don't really know what the balance is because...
With a grain of salt?
With maybe a few grains of salt, because he didn't really... They didn't even have 1,000 minutes with him off the court, which is... I mean, that's a big kind of swing, so I don't know how much of those off numbers are actually... all that relevant in comparison to his on numbers, if that makes sense. I mean, he still was a net positive for them, but
he might have been benched at the same time as a Sheik a bunch of times for all I
know.
Yeah,
right.
He poured over it. But his defense is an issue.
It certainly is. Yeah, I'm not trying to get around that. I was just the on off numbers. I don't know how legitimate those are. They may be exactly representative of the impact he has on that team. I don't know. I just find it weird that it was so heavily skewed. I mean, he played nearly 3,000 minutes last year, and mm-hmm. there weren't even 1,000 minutes with him off the court, which is that's a pretty
you.
Big...
I'm with you on how the impact can be bigger, especially we've talked about this for perimeter players. A big man has a disproportionate impact on defense, and a smaller guy often on the perimeter has a disproportionate responsibility on offense. So I'm with you on defending Steve Nash. I believe he deserved at least one of those MVPs.
I actually thought he deserved the third year, which would have been a third straight. I think maybe that's when Dirk won it. I thought he deserved it that year more than any of them.
That was a funny year. A lot of people were up for it.
It was a great year in terms of individual top talent.
LeBron could have won it that year. Am I imagining that?
I feel like that's accurate.
Oh, that's it. Might be the one year he didn't. Other than his rookie year.
That was
that was a funny thing. Not to detour this completely, but remember in 2011, that MVP, that was a contentious MVP debate. And it was funny to me that the argument was between the analytically inclined people who favored Dwight Howard versus the eye test people who favored Derrick Rose. And even though LeBron James was probably better than both of them, because of the decision, there was this understanding of he's not going to win, so he's just not part of the conversation.
That's the crazy thing is LeBron James was actually the most valuable player in the league that year. But yeah. it was decided very early on, this guy is not going to get an award after he duped us so and lauded and flogged us with his celebrity. That's what he did. He flogged us with his celebrity.
I thought you wanted to say something other than celebrity right there.
I really did. LeBron in that 2006-2007 season where Dirk won MVP, 27 points a game, 6.7 rebounds, 6 assists. He was second in win shares for whatever that's worth. He was fourth or sixth. He was actually sixth in win shares per 48, so maybe that was a little skewed.
It's always fun when people quote win shares didactically to end an argument. It's always fun to go, so calculate a win share for me.
Dirk was the runaway winner in win shares and win shares per 48.
Yeah,
it wasn't even close. Maybe he did deserve it more.
He deserved it. He obviously deserved it. It is funny, though. I believe we're getting more efficiency conscious. I remember looking back at the 2001 MVP that Iverson won, and I'm not saying he shouldn't have won it, but it's amazing.
You're not saying it this time, but you've said it a lot.
Well, I kind of think he shouldn't have, but that's a different topic for a different day. Sure. It's funny to see how guys who had some of the most efficient years of their careers, like Ray Allen and John Stockton, had maybe one or two MVP votes, and there was just no conception of how it even mattered that they weren't missing a lot of shots or that they were making a lot of three-point shots. We didn't have that understanding.
The most amazing, like, in terms of efficiency awards kind of kerfuffle that we've had in the last 20 years would be Latrell Sprewell making All-NBA first team in the 93-94 season. Sure. Because I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but he averaged 21-4-4. But you look at it like just the advanced numbers, and I know there are people would be like, "Oh, the advanced numbers that you don't tell you stuff, or the formulas, BS, or whatever." But he had a 15.9 PER. His win shares per 48 were 0.108. Like he didn't have very dynamic advanced stats, but he was kind of this new force, and Jordan was gone, and 21-4-4 is pretty fun. Like he led the league in minutes. Maybe we don't put enough emphasis on guys that lead the league in minutes.
You just don't understand the impact that Latrell Sprewell had on a team where the coach's neck was too fat and too large and hands around it.
And he would have had to push Chris Webber out of the way anyway to get to it. Because Chris Webber was trying to get at that fat neck. Chris Webber was all over that fat neck then.
Yeah, no, it is true. And even if Derrick Rose won the MVP, he wasn't wildly inefficient. These ideas are seeping in to the mainstream, and you see it reflected in who gets the awards.
But he did have some pretty decent efficiency numbers, right?
Rose?
Yeah.
Sorry, you got cut off for a little bit. I thought that I just made a point and you paused uncomfortably.
I muted myself to blow my nose and forgot to unmute myself.
So we're talking about Rose? Yeah, he was really good that year. I would have to revisit it. If I have any regret about that season, it's that I spent way too much time complaining about Rose winning the MVP and not enough time just appreciating Derrick Rose, because then we didn't see a whole lot of Derrick Rose after that. So
yeah, look what you did.
I didn't get into it because I just regret how I experienced that.
Look what you did to him. You took him for granted and he got hurt, and I blame that all on you. It's funny though that we got so angry about narrative and tropes, as you like to say, or exemplums or whatever. Your trope word that you love to bandy about. Like a kitten with a yarn ball. it's weird because on a certain level the narrative of the season does actually matter, right?
Yeah.
And the narrative of that season was LeBron's evil. He shouldn't win. He shouldn't deserve to win anything because of him flogging us as he did. And look at Derrick Rose. He's this humble guy. He's leading a team kind of by himself, even though he had, you know, a defensive genius with great defensive players.
This goes back to our underrating of defense and our lack of acknowledgement of it.
Yeah, and Derrick Rose, I was fine. Like, there were probably six guys that year that if they had won the MVP, I'd been like, yeah, that's dead on. I'm good with that. And it became like this, oh, Rose isn't as efficient as Howard and James or whatever, but Rose was really good.
He was. Harlalobos Vulgaris has always spoken well of Derrick Rose. I don't know what he sees in Rose that go beyond the numbers. I've always been curious about it, but it's made me hesitant to have any sort of anti-Rose talk, because there perhaps is something I'm missing.
I mean, that it's kind of the thing with people love to compare him and Westbrook because they're both point guards who can dunk and are very explosive.
You got to add Steph Curry to that list, Zach. I mean, he's dunking all summer. Have you not seen this?
No, I have not seen it. Ricky Rubio can dunk again.
Everybody can dunk.
He said that he can finally dunk again. He said he never was able to jump that high, but his leg is strong enough that he's dunking.
That's going to be awesome. I hope Ricky Rubio dunks on somebody.
If he dunks in a game this year, even if it's just a breakaway by himself, I'm flipping the media table in front of me. I'm going nuts. I'm going full Roni Turioff. By the way, I bought it completely into Roni Turioff. I love talking to this guy. I asked him about the Turioff twirl, and I've got a post brewing about the Turioff twirl, but he actually said that it used to be just that, you know, that kind of two-finger count the basket motion that referees make and that some players make. That was supposed to be the Turioff twirl. It was just that count it, and then he was doing it with DeAndre Jordan to focus on when baskets were scored, which is a weird thing to do, but whatever. And then he said he actually missed that motion and accidentally did a twirl, but didn't want to like make it look like he didn't know what he was doing, so he pretended that he did it on purpose, and that's where the Turioff twirl came from. And then he just talked about how he doesn't know what he's going to do when he celebrates. Like, he's literally not in control of his emotions.
I don't buy that.
Don't you dare doubt Roni Turioff. I'm all in on this
guy. That guy. That guy's personality, he's just some sort of gregarious, smiling swashbuckler.
He's got a great perspective on life. He even said this. He said he made it through a heart surgery. He made it through growing up in the projects. Like, he loves his life, and he's going to enjoy it, and no one's going to take that enjoyment away from him. I enjoy his enjoyment.
What are the projects in France? The projet?
Oh, you don't even know. It's I mean, you get half a baguette.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah, it's really actually. I don't know. There might be some really awful areas
Everybody
in Paris.
Everybody headbutts you.
There are gypsies everywhere.
This
in Paris.
Is just going to turn into some sort of terrible anti-gypsy.
I just feel like it's going to turn very xenophobic.
I believe I cut you off when you were talking about how people compare Rose and Westbrook, and now, sadly, we don't have that comparison because of the injuries. I would like that to resurface again. The odd rivalry between Bulls fans and Thunder fans over this topic.
It is weird. I mean, like, if you said Westbrook was the second best, like, let's even just throw Chris Paul out of this. So let's say you say Derrick Rose is the best point guard in the league, and Russell Westbrook is the second best point guard in the league 2 years from now, and there's a significant gap between the two. But you have the second best point guard in the league. Why isn't that good enough?
There can only be one, as you say.
You have to cape up? I didn't say that. It was more Highlander.
Well, no, but you like quoting the Highlander when it comes to that, where we're just obsessed with ranking. We're obsessed with who is best. Whose team is it? That's always the silliest question to me, because there's no such thing. There's no distinction. There's no official, it is his team, so why are people always asking this as though there needs to be one guy who owns it? But for whatever the reason, we want to be very reductive when it comes to giving credit, and that's how this comes up. And when it comes to point guards, man, you just can't really draw a distinction between a few of them. You can say Chris Paul is the best based on the metrics, but after that, it's a hodgepodge.
Yeah, it is weird just because even within similar systems, there are just some very different roles and kind of duties that these guys have. Mm-hmm. I mean, not everyone's playing the same game in a sense, you know?
Not everyone's playing the same game, and there are also a lot of injuries that cloud the conversation. That really mucks up matters. Sorry for the strong language. But it makes it difficult. I don't know how good Derrick Rose is. I don't know how good Russell Westbrook will be when he comes back from this, and whether or not this knee issue will be a recurring problem. And that alters how good they are, and we're having to make that choice today of where they rank.
Yeah, that is something I struggled with in our Elite 100 rankings, and maybe you struggled with in the ESPN NBA rank that you participated in. It was trying to figure out, what do I feel about these guys not knowing how they come back?
And I managed to overrate Rondo. I did notice that. He was 21.
You were so up your own orifice on Rondo, I can't even tell you. That is my least favorite thing about you.
Your least favorite thing?
My favorite thing is your wild gesticulations while you talk. But my least favorite thing is your opinion on Rajon Rondo.
Look, I'm just saying people are acting as though the only issue is the ACL injury. I hope he comes back. I hope he's great when he comes back. But he also wasn't having the best season before it happened. He also hasn't improved in 3 years. It seems as though the best Rondo might have been age 22, around that time Rondo.
And this is where I will cut you off and say, okay. I don't think you understand the severity of plantar fasciitis.
That's where that was headed.
Yes. I really think this is an underrated injury that we don't give any real credence to. Like, we talk about, oh, he's got plantar fasciitis, that sucks. But I don't think people realize how debilitating that injury is.
Well, we might learn new things about it. Perhaps it connects, the foot, those foot muscles, when they're torn, it might connect to the brain and cause the brain to do things like chasing a triple double instead of trying to score and find the best options for your teammates. That maybe that's something that plantar fasciitis does.
I don't know that that's an accurate thing. The only problem I have with Rondo's game is his free throw shooting. That's the only problem I have with this game.
The only one of what's all a, the problems you could have.
What's another one?
The shooting.
He's a good mid-range shooter.
He's an okay mid-range shooter.
No, sir.
And a poor three-point shooter. And he doesn't shoot when he's open. And he often turns down layups when he's wide open for layups because he's trying to pass somewhere. Now, he's a stupendously talented player. This is true. And he's a unique player. He's a fascinating person. I've interviewed him. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done. I don't dislike Rondo. I just believe that after all these years of the offense not being very good, that he runs, it should factor into his ranking a little bit.
Let me just tell you this. The last three seasons, 16 to 23 feet, 41%, 39%. Last year, 48% on 3.6 attempts per game. What is this idea that he's not a good outside shooter if you're – I mean, you
I
talk
said
about
– okay, and I said he was a poor three-point shooter.
Okay, 48%.
Last year, and a lot of those are wide open because it's the least efficient shot in basketball or the one the defenses want you to take.
So we're mad at him for hitting wide open shots.
Well, I don't believe we had a large sample size. Of course, you're going to turn right back around and say, you said he was playing badly that season. So you go back in the sample size. I know your game, Harper. I can see what you're doing.
13, 11, and 5.5 is not bad. If you ask me, 48% from the field. I mean, I don't know.
How's that true shooting percentage treating you?
Well, I mean, who's to say if that's even a real stat? But, you know,
where they say it's not a real stat. Shooting percentage isn't a real stat. It's one of the most real stats you can have, true shooting and effective field goal percentage, because it's simple. It's just simple and based on...
It's also a stat that I cite regularly in my anti-Josh Smith propaganda.
That's an issue. I believe you were kind of right, though, when we used to argue over Josh Smith. If we're really taking me apart, I might have too much of an affinity for lanky power forwards who can block shots.
If anything, all this proves is that you should listen to me on Rajon Rondo.
What? No.
You've been wrong in the past with arguments we've had, and I don't know that I've ever been wrong about an argument that we've had. So the numbers are in my favor.
This is just all that I'm willing to admit it. I'm willing to admit my own flaws. You should learn from me.
Oh, no. That would leave me quite vulnerable.
I'm not saying that he's bad. I just believe that his production over the last 3 years or so has been a little bit above average. He has had these incredible moments on national television. We all know he's talented. But perhaps if he was not on Boston in a major media market and not surrounded by really good players and a really good defense, we might have a different opinion about him.
I will tell you this. I actually ranked him the lowest of the three of us on this project. I had him 27th I believe.
How can he not be in the 30s? I don't understand.
I would accept that based on the injury and not knowing how he'll come back.
Okay.
I would accept, like, oh, he should be in the 30s. I had him 27th. Royce had him around 21st, it looks like. And Matt had him 15th, 14th, 15th, something like that.
What?
Yeah.
Matt, what? Does Matt not count injuries against players? Is that the idea behind it?
I don't really know. Well, we talked about that a little bit about factoring injuries. I don't know what his. I know he did factor in injuries. I just don't know how much credence he gave, and that was something that I definitely struggled with as we did the ranking. I will tell you, Matt also ranked Tony Parker as the fourth best player in the league, which I found interesting.
I'd have to look at it. I could see it. I could see it.
You could never convince me that he is better than either LeBron, Durant, Chris Paul, or Dwight Howard. Never convince me of that.
Dwight Howard, maybe, just because we don't know about the back. I wouldn't tell somebody they're wrong for ranking him there. I just don't know I'd rank him there. Is Matt still doing that thing where he's passive aggressive with the Warriors and he's saying all these glowing things about them? You get the feeling he doesn't quite mean it.
I think he actually
chastise their over exuberant fans.
I think it's a fan thing. I really do. I think that I think he has a good handle on what the Warriors do. I think he is not a fan of the fan base, which, hey, I cannot fault him with.
You're not a fan of the fan base either.
I'm just not a fan of the Bay Area people in general, as we discussed last time you were on.
Yeah. It's, man, I don't know what's going on with that. I don't want to talk Warriors every time I come on here, but they are funny in that the analytical projections for this team would seem to be somewhere squarely in the mid-40s for win total, but the consensus is high above that, and I'm not sure if I don't know which one's correct.
It's all going to – I don't even think it's a Curry thing anymore. Like, it all rests on how healthy Andrew Bogut is, right? I mean, I know they survived the regular season without him. But, yeah, and that's the thing. By all accounts, he looks great. He's, you know, there are no limitations, really. And when he is healthy, he's one of the best centers in the league, which I think people forget. It's just, will he hold up for 82 games? Will he make it 65 games or more? And I think for him to do that, and even that's not all that healthy, but I think if he can do that and have 65 healthy games, not just 65 like trudging through trying to play through injuries, I think that puts them maybe well above the analytical projections because he affects the defense so much.
Yeah, what's funny about Bogut is politically, and I don't know how they do things over there in Australia, he's very anti-lazy poor people.
Oh, that's a very Australian thing, it seems like. Just based on my sister's lived there for quite some time now, maybe 7-8 years. She has kids that are there, a husband. Like I'm pretty decently familiar with the Australian culture. They do not like the lazy poor people.
Well, he's all about that, and it's just so funny to me because he's so defensive when he talks about these injuries as stuff that just happened to him that he's blameless for. And I think, why don't you apply that sensibility for some of the poor people you're so angry at, where perhaps it wasn't what they were doing that got them into the situation? That's just one thing. I'm not anti-Bogut or how he views the world politically necessarily. Well, yeah, I am. Insulate myself from that.
I like that. I like how you argued with yourself there.
Yes, this is what happens when you're an only child. You just set up yourself to argue against. But on the Warriors, I do see a lot of positive indicators where everybody's lost weight. Everybody showed up early for the camp. And
oh, I would like to talk to you briefly about this whole weight loss thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for years it's been put on 20 pounds, put on 15 pounds of muscle, whatever. But at least, like, based on what I've heard about the Warriors and what you just said and then what I've seen with the Wolves, this league is getting sleek.
Yeah.
Fat is potential.
Orange is the new fat? I don't know. I'm looking for something. I'm reaching. I'm not sure where to go with it. But, yeah, the Warriors are unnervingly skinny. Bogut got skinny. He was in that process over the year. Lee got super skinny. And Draymond Green, this is okay. I can say this. This isn't too much of an insult.
You've already gotten in trouble with Draymond before.
Yeah, but his shoulders are just so stretch marked. from the rapid weight loss that it looks like spider webs.
Okay.
And wow, I don't know if that will have an impact. I have no idea if that means that Draymond's going to be an even more fearsome defender or David Lee's going to be a passable defender. But Bob Myers pulled the players in at the end of the year and said, look, this is how it's going to be, fatty.
I like to think that he talked to them the entire time while like pinching a love handle. It just like went over their offseason like desires. Like,
see Bob Myers, he's so skinny. He's great shape. Everybody says that about him, that he's in better shape than any of the players. He's a workout freak. So I could see him doing that, maybe a little towel snap.
Yeah. A little towel snap. He just really bullied the players into having like image issues.
Hey, fat boy.
let you in on a little secret. You might want to buy some stock in Shabazz Muhammad.
Really?
Just for the simple fact that I don't know if he's going to be a good player, but he already hired a chef and lost a bunch of weight from summer league to going into training camp.
You know how I feel about that. That I know. Potential in the skies. So.
I immediately thought of you when I saw him, when I talked to him about like his off-season habits and stuff, and since this rookie transition program, that might have been a wake-up call because he's talked about like the entire almost everything he talks about is doing the right thing on the court and being a professional off the court. And I know Kevin Martin reached out to him. I know a bunch of the veterans on the Wolves reached out to him. And after the whole rookie transition issue, maybe he is already. Received the wake-up call, answered it, and is setting up calendar alerts in his phone to be a professional each day.
It's quite a calendar alert. I like the idea of having an all formerly fat team at the end of the year if so many guys are slimming down.
Yeah.
Kevin Love might have set the tone for this. He might have been the big influencer.
He did this in 2011, too, where he went through these immense workout programs where he came back and it was shocking how much weight he lost, and then last year he played with Team USA, so he didn't get to do his whole routine of off-season workouts that he had established the year before, and then this year right back at it, and he looks really great. Also quite a surly fellow right now with the media.
Really? Why is he so surly?
Well, I think it's because they kind of pseudo ran him out of town after the Woj article last year.
Oh yeah,
I just don't think he took too kindly to that, and so they joked a little bit yesterday. He didn't talk after the first day of training camp, and then yesterday he's just made it very clear he doesn't want to talk about the past. He just wants to focus on getting better, and he had a couple of joking answers here and there, but for the most part, he's very businesslike. It's very un-Kevin Love for these interviews early on.
Athletes are just always looking for an adversary. Yeah, that's why it's so hard to talk about athletes on the internet, because they want some sort of fuel. And even if you're making some sort of nuanced critique of their game or not even insulting them, they're just going to turn it into that. I have found where, oh, yeah, I'll show you. I said you played well. Uh-huh. Yeah, you'll see. You know, I don't know if you've ever had any of those interactions.
The most recent one. Well, I've had great interactions with Roy Hibbert.
Yes.
I haven't had a bad one with him. He even retweeted a joke I had about Dante Jones not passing the ball ever during last season. And so I've had good interactions with him. The last one I had with an athlete may have been Kent Bazemore, who followed me and has retweeted a couple of things I've said in regards to after Summer League. I photoshopped his head on Michael Jordan in Space Jam stretching out for the half-court dunk. And he apparently liked that quite a bit.
He likes talking about his wingspan. He's really into this idea.
He's apparently very proud of God's gift of his arm length.
Yeah, I was a little worried that when I talked about it, it would be objectifying to a certain extent.
Yeah, like you're treating him like a circus freak.
Yeah, that was my fear. But no, he really is into it, and that's the smart play. If you're on the fringes, if you're on the margins, you have to really embrace, and man, it's easy for Bazemore to embrace anything.
Because his arms are so long.
Yeah, that was the joke there. You have to embrace that which makes you distinct.
Let me run this by you just to promote some stuff that we've got on CBS. Okay. When this
I'm
is posted
around in my chair right now, I'm in pain.
This is being posted on Friday. We're almost done. This is being posted on Friday.
I'm sweating, Zach.
And our top five for the Elite 100 will be out on Friday. And as it goes, we have – this is pre-injury, I'll let you know. Dwight Howard is fifth. Russell Westbrook is fourth. Chris Paul is third. Kevin Durant is second. And LeBron James is the best player in the league. How do you feel about that?
So, wait. Dwight Howard is fifth?
Fifth.
Fifth? I might drop Dwight Howard down a little bit.
Oh, my God.
I might do it. I think that...
I really like asking you your opinion, and then my instant reaction to the first thing you say is just disgust. That's one of my favorite things about our friendship.
Opinion? You think it should be different? with Dwight, you tend to believe the player will return to form after the injury.
Yeah.
I tend to be more pessimistic, and that's where I am with Howard.
I'm sorry, I believe in medicine.
Do you believe in the power of medicine to do anything? What if he was dead, Zach?
Hey, they're doing things with stem cell research these days.
Look, I believe in the value of Dwight Howard before all this back stuff. And I would argue on behalf of him as a top two or three player. That's not shocking. But I also think that, and we've spoken a bit about this, how the people, the analytic community, the analytics community, we're almost too defensive, pardon the pun, on behalf of Dwight Howard, just because there are so many idiots who want to dismiss what he does and dismiss his value and reduce it to he has no offensive moves, which is patently absurd,
right?
Or he's bad at offense, which is also stupid, and we see what he does on defense, and his ability to move like a guard while being that large. It's just incredible impact. But he hasn't been that guy in a minute, and I don't know
if he's... Oh, my God. I can't believe he said in a minute.
In a minute. I saw... You know why it was in my head? It was that Zane Lowe, not Zach Lowe, Zane Lowe interviewing Kanye West, and he used an in the minute, and I figured if a British guy could do it, you know.
That's one of my least favorite slang terms, I gotta tell you.
You hate slang. That's what you hate the Bay Area. You hate all the Bay Area slang that gets tossed around here.
I just hate stupid slang. And that is like throwing shade and catch the fade and, I don't know, don't be a Dwayne Wade or whatever the hell you want to rhyme it with. It really bothers me.
Shade and fade. Bootsy? Do you hate Bootsy?
No, I like Bootsy. I love Bootsy.
You like Bootsy? Do you like Cuddy?
I like Cuddy.
You don't like it? You don't like it?
I never liked Hyphy.
You never liked Hyphy?
Never.
Interesting. Huh.
I do like Bootsy, though. That's one I gotta start using more. That's a great one.
You haven't used it in a minute.
I literally have used it within the last minute.
That's true. that's factually incorrect, what I just said right there. But with Dwight Howard, yeah. How long is he this Dwight Howard or the Laker Dwight Howard until we drop him down the rankings? And say that he's Laker Dwight Howard in perpetuity, or at least for the next few years, you wouldn't put him top five.
No, that's certain. I think that he has had a full year to recover from the back surgery, or more than that at this point, like a year and a half, right? Mm-hmm. I think if he plays like he did last year this season, I would drop him down. I would give him 1 year removed, a year and a half removed from this, and if he is not the Dwight Howard we saw by the end of this season, then yeah, I would drop him down.
And who was number four? It's embarrassing. People who are listening actually heard you, and even though I'm on this with you,
yeah.
You start listing things, my brain shuts off.
You are quite hunched over.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook was number four, and now it looks really stupid because of the injury.
See, that seems to me some sort of overreaction to OKC flaming out of the playoffs, where we wouldn't have said that before the playoffs. And it's so funny because usually it's a player plays really well in the playoffs and then he gets too much of a boost from that. We might be seeing that a little bit with Paul George, Roy Hibbert, Steph Curry, you could argue, even though I would say that Curry was doing that since the All-Star break. But those names come to mind. With Westbrook, it's his absence that seems to have propelled him into that echelon.
Yeah, absence makes the ranking grow larger, as my grandpa used to say.
Yeah, well, in this particular case, it would seem to be. I don't know if I would put him up there. He's a difficult player to assess because the team does so much better when he's on the court. But he does miss a lot of shots, and he also takes a lot of shots that are just insane to take and very frustrating.
Well, I think that's when you get into the value of shot creation, right? That whole
But he creates shots that don't need to be created. Where he'll just be in transition, and he'll do a pull-up three-pointer with 21 seconds on the shot clock, and I don't understand why that happens or has to happen. And then when you criticize it, the people will go, well, he just needs to be aggressive. You can't take that away. That's part of what makes him great. And I kind of think he can. I kind of think it's just a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't like that shot from him. I do love the 16-footer in transition from him. That's a deadly shot.
Beckley is the greatest analogy for Westbrook, which is he's like a doctor who's the best doctor in town, and he has the best rate of saving his patients. But every now and again, he just stabs a patient to death. And,
I think you just pitched like a new
doing that while saying he's a very good doctor.
You just pitched a new AMC show.
Oh, it's a new spin on Dexter.
Yeah.
House.
Yeah.
It's a combination. It sounds more CBS to me.
Oh, no, well, I mean, if it's well done, of course. If it's a well done show. I did mention JAG and NCIS on the Thursday episode. I was pretty proud of that.
Oh my God. You're like an old man. You are just an old traditional man. You hate your slang. You like your CBS. You watch your baseball.
Of course I like my CBS. It's the number one programming in America.
Oh, I forgot that this is the podcast we're on.
Well, and we're just in this reality. I will say this. Today's Friday. Last night's Big Bang Theory, fantastic. Never laughed so hard in my life.
Oh my God! I mean, I'm sure I have yet to watch it, but I'm probably missing out on quite a bit. And you know, that's all I got in Big Bang Theory. I just know it's popular. I just know it's one of those shows that everybody in America watches, but nobody I know watches.
Yeah, well, I mean, you live in Oakland.
Everybody's too busy trying out their chicken farm out here.
And throwing
fades and shade. Running red lights. That was the new thing in Oakland recently, was people went from doing donuts and all that kind of destructive driving. Although that still happens. I heard from somebody who works in the city that the new problem is that people just run red lights.
One of my favorite internet clips ever was the whistles go woo-woo.
Oh, yeah?
Because, I mean, one, it's fantastic, but there is a part in there where someone does the whistle and then peels out and just blows right through a stop sign. it's very subtle in there, but just blows right through a stop sign. And I think there's a car at the stop sign, like, to the left. And it just, like, that really sums up the driving.
This is why I love living here. Because of various cutbacks that have happened, and it might have had something to do with the Occupy movement and all of that that costs a lot of money, we have slightly over 600 police officers for the whole city.
It's not a lot.
It's not a lot. There are over 400,000 people who live here. There are slightly over 600 policemen. So it's like everything's legal. Everything's legal. Anything you want to do is legal. Any way I want to drive is fine. If I want to talk on my cell phone, that's cool. If I want to drive on the wrong side of the road, that's also cool. Don't know anybody's been pulled over by a police officer in Oakland. Haven't seen it for any sort of traffic violation. You can go up various streets. There's open prostitution. I do not partake. I do not recommend partaking. But it is open and in the daytime on San Pablo and International.
Wow, you know the streets.
Well, it's obvious. These are main streets. These are main streets where this occurs, and I'm not even naming all of them. there's a street called Oaksterdam, 17th Street around downtown Oakland, where there are various marijuana cafes like you would see in Amsterdam. I don't know how that's legal. I don't know how that's legal, but the reason it's legal is because it's a city with not a small amount of crime and only 600 police officers, and they have to prioritize. So the rest of it is just some sort of Lord of the Flies reality for us to sort out.
Sounds great.
Well, a lot of warriors are moving here. There are more warriors living in Oakland than I think have ever lived in the past year. So,
well, sure, anything goes.
Yeah, you're not going to get caught for anything. Yeah. It's fine. That's why everyone's here. You know, that's why I almost hit Kent Bazemore with my car as he was dropping off a key for his landlord to come over here.
He said dropping off a key. I got really worried that we were breaking news here.
Reminds me of I Got Five on It.
I think that's probably a good place to end, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end, especially because I am a pool of sweat right now in my hunched over position.
You should go stretch your back out. So you don't end up like Dwight Howard.
Oh, this is not good, Zach.
Well, I appreciate the pain and suffering you've gone through on this podcast, both physically and mentally.
Oh, man.
And we can follow you at Sherwood Strauss on Twitter.
Okay. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Ethan.